any product you build can pretty much be replicated more easily than ever, except things like community, creating relationships with people, being inspirational, inspire, trust, authenticity. Those are the things that are much, much harder for other companies to replicate. And so again, if you're too focused on building product or features and just getting numbers, you're by definition doing things other people can just copy easily.
This is Revenue Makers, the podcast by Sixth Sense, investigating successful revenue strategies that pushed companies ahead.
So Simon, I'm going to say welcome back. It's been a whirlwind of travel, and we're coming to something pretty exciting that we just did with Revenue Makers Live on stage.
Revenue Makers went international. We're global, Adam. We did our first live recording of the podcast at the Inspire UK event that Sixth Sense hosted in London. Kind of cool to be doing this up on stage, not in our yoga pants and our slippers.
And it felt very much like a talk show as much as less than a podcast. And we had a pretty amazing guest in Aaron Ross, who, you know, author of Predictable Revenue and sort of the godfather of outbound in the software world.
Yeah. And we talked about his books. We talked about how his philosophy has evolved, because I think it has changed from when the initial book came out. We moved into AI and delved into how to be a great leader. So it's a great episode.
And he's really got some great insights on predictable revenue then, predictable revenue now. And I especially like when he talks about the concept of how predictable revenue was less about emails and cold calling, more about establishing specialization, having your teams that are generating demand, having your teams that respond to it. So it was really a really great conversation. Let's go shoot you over to London. Maybe we can listen in.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Aaron. Appreciate you joining us.
All the way from Edinburgh.
I know. It's a trip. Oh, I got to come down to London. I know. It's hard.
So we're just going to go. We're going to get right into it. And we're going to go to the elephant in the room. So Sixth Sense, no spam, no forms, no cold calls. It's a little bit different than if we go back to sort of the origins of predictable revenue. It's evolved. Things have changed. You yourself have even said that the death of predictable revenue is here, or it's evolving, it's changing. What does that actually mean to you? And what do you think that means going forward?
Sure. Well, the book Predictable Revenue came out 2011. All right. So it's been a lifetime, 13 years.
A while.
It would be middle school at this point.
And, you know, look, on LinkedIn, I get it. It's a lot more dramatic to say predictable revenue is dead. Outbound is dead. X, Y, or Z is dead. Even in my book, the first one said cold calling's dead. I mean, it wasn't really. I was just being dramatic. Nothing ever really dies, right? It evolves. And if you read the book Predictable Revenue, some of you have, some of you haven't, I'm sure, but the fundamental principles are still the same. The tactics change. One of the tactics in the book was sending cold referral emails, right? And that got a 10% response rate and doubled Salesforce.com's enterprise pipeline and revenue growth. Sending cold referral emails sometimes works today, a lot of times doesn't. And what you find is that with AI, whatever the tactic is that you, what's the subject of my newsletter? What's the body of my cold email? What's the paid ad thing? My belief is it worked for 5 years back then, and then it worked for 2 years, and the expiration date of any tactic is going to shorten as AI and just the pace of things continue. So I feel it's a lot more important to understand, like, go back to first principles, to understand, like, what are we really trying to accomplish, and the confidence, hey, we can create our own tactics, or the, you know, predictable revenue tactics don't work, but we can come up with our own. And so, for example, predictable revenue, one of the ideas that isn't dead, but is living in new ways, is the idea of specialization. So there's some people who probably remember sales evolved where salespeople did everything, right? They did their own prospecting, did their own selling customers, and maybe managed their own accounts. And one of the big ideas was, wow, break that into different pieces so that you've got prospectors who prospect, inbound lead responders who respond to those, salespeople who close new customers, and this everything after sales is customer success and so on. All right, those jobs may change. Your business may not want or need SDRs or BDRs or XDRs, whatever the lingo is. Maybe it does. But the principle is still people doing fewer things better. When you overload anybody with too many things, marketing, every marketer has too many things to do, you just can't do as many of them well. So that principle is still going to be true today. It's going to be true in, as far as I can see. So it's like, understand the principle. How do you apply it to today's situation? That's what people need to go to versus, What's the best subject line today?
And I think that ties in really nicely to the keynote from this morning around the antidote to more. We have to evolve. We have to specialize. We have to take all of the goodness of the newness that is out there in the AI and the scale, but also make it real and effective for what we're doing. So what is your message for the people who say outbound is dead? Because they say it, by the way, everywhere, in all caps lock on LinkedIn at least once a week,
doom scrolling, right? Doom scrolling.
Yeah, I mean, look, outbound is not dead. They might believe it and maybe didn't work for them. It's not for every company. And even in at least the last book, From Impossible to Inevitable, they said, look, outbound is not for everyone. Right? And here's some reasons why it may not be for you, but it's very much alive. It has changed. And it's kind of like saying, I'm sure there's lots of groups online that say, eating meat is dead. Or others who say, eating plants is dead. Everyone says everything for attention, right? Everyone's trying to sell you on getting followers or a course or some idea. It's like, well, no. Everything can work in this world of infinite choices, because that's where we are. People get overwhelmed, especially executives and parents and executives who are parents. And so it's just like, I can't, my processing power is smaller. And so it's like, I want the answer. But the answer is you kind of have to find your own way, especially with lead generation, right? It's so complicated, changing so fast that experimenting with outbound in a way that fits you, whether it might be intent signals, whether it might be cold email, maybe it's not, there's more variety. It's almost like there's more ingredients. You want to make a cake. There used to be 5 ingredients, egg, flour, sugar, butter. And now there's 500 ingredients. You're like, which ones do I use and how do I do it? And it's like you need to figure out how to make your own process to generate leads, whether it's outbound or inbound or both or even more. It's difficult because it's so confusing. What do I do?
We're still going to bake cakes.
It's still alive. I mean, you can see examples on LinkedIn as well. People make it work every day, but it's not for everybody.
So actually realized we just jumped into it, but kind of going back to Simon's keynote about the people and all that. So your story, your personal story, I think is fascinating. Both just talking about the book is now 14 years old. Like, what's sort of been the progression before, career progression in your life, and then since?
Yeah, well, rather than the antidote to more, I think my story has been more is more.
In all facets.
In all facets, right? Everyone's like, you have how many kids? So we have 10 children. And there's the before, yeah, there's the, you know, before.
Did you hear the audible gasp in the room, like, by the way?
The short answer is my 30s, I was like, I need to learn how to be successful. I don't really know the sales thing. I'm going to go get a job in sales to learn, right? And that worked out at Salesforce. And I would say that the main learning there too was I knew I needed to learn sales. I didn't let my ego get in the way of going from, I had founded and been CEO of this venture funded company, which failed. And so I got a job as a starter answering 800 line at Salesforce. Like, I need to learn this. So I'm just going to do it, but I'll figure it out, right? I knew it was important. I'll figure it out. That has worked for me. And then getting married in 2011. It's not a coincidence that I got married in 2011 and the book came out in 2011. I had 2 kids from my wife's first marriage and she was pregnant very quickly. Like, oh, I have to make money, more money. Published a book, expanded that, and learned a lot about consulting with companies, what works, as well as making money for myself. And also seeing through the 2000s and then 2010s and 2020s, again, what are the transitional tactics that work today but don't tomorrow versus what sticks? And then now, seeing AI come out and the world change, again, it feels like there's a lot of new stuff, but it's not that new. It's like these cycles that come around. There's always some new technology, the internet. Everyone goes crazy with it and makes huge differences. The noise, it's kind of like you make tons of progress at the beginning, but then you don't make progress because the arms race, everyone catches up. That little story with London, downtown traffic years ago, the average mile per hour with horse and buggy was 5 miles an hour, right, in downtown London. And today with Teslas and such, right, the average mile per hour is 5 miles per hour. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Like, that's the kind of the place I am now, is seeing the more the world's changing. Actually, in a lot of ways, it's the same. We're working harder, and it's more confusing and busier, but we're not actually making progress. It doesn't feel that way. How many people feel like you're kind of stuck in place doing a lot of the same stuff, or it's, you know, you're working harder, but you don't feel like you're making a lot of progress? See? A bunch of people. There's a lot of, like, hands that way. It's okay. Yeah, no, a lot of people, most of the room would feel that way. It's just, you know, it's hard to admit that.
I think I feel that way. And from, especially the last couple of years in marketing, and just like progress back, reset, progress back, reset.
Totally.
It's wild.
And it's only going to get faster, my theory. So
10 kids and how many pets?
We have 5 dogs, a cat, and 7 or 8 horses. Not in the same house, right? So there's some.
I was actually thinking logistically how that was going to work.
The horses are at livery. We have 4 older kids in the States. It's still complicated. It's like a big game of Tetris or a 7-sided Rubik's Cube, but yeah.
I want to go back to something you said. You said, I got to figure it out, right? And that entrepreneurial spirit, that sort of can-do attitude, do you feel like people are born with it or it is cultivated over time?
Some people are born with it. I don't think I was. If I look back, I couldn't point to a reason, but it can for sure be cultivated. I mean, like we have 10 children, and it's one of the things we hope to cultivate. Like the whole parenting thing is this other area of like, you have no idea what's working. Just do your best. But yeah, I know this is important. And I think these days, this is one of my top, people ask me advice, like do what feels right, even when it doesn't make sense. Or if you feel like, I don't know what's going to be successful. I don't know what's going to happen. No, because if you're doing something new that could be creative and gives you a breakthrough, you don't know what's going to happen by definition. And that's one of the opportunities now where if you're just looking for things that are proven to work, that's everybody else. You're in that, you know, the red ocean, whether it's email tactics or newsletter tactics. Yeah, there's some things that do continue to work, but when you're not getting the results you want and you're looking for some other proven technique, you're not going to get a big breakthrough. Like if you say, look, I need to do something new here. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to figure it out. That is almost the only thing that's ever worked. And I think I've seen it mostly not only making money to support the family, because I started at Salesforce, but not very early. I really didn't get much equity, didn't make much money there. Like all the money I made basically went to pay for divorce debts from a first marriage. And having a family, I'm like, oh, I need to make money. So having kids is what motivated me to make more money. And I made a lot of money with predictable revenue in the business and the books and such. It's never enough. It was the, hey, let's have kids. Let's adopt. Half the kids are adopted. How's it going to work? I don't know. Like, it just feels important. How are we going to pay for it? I don't know. It's just, we have to do it. Like time and time again, that is what has created breakthroughs in creating financial wealth or creating emotional wealth through a family. And it's realizing, hey, is this feel important, but I'm scared to do it, or my team or my boss is scared to do it because I can't prove ROI. Well, again, if you're looking for a breakthrough, you won't be able to prove ROI almost by definition. And it gets easier with practice. Yeah. Still, you know, they say feel the fear and do it anyway. That never goes away.
Yeah, life feels like practice most of the time. Just go back a little bit too. You talked about working harder and staying in place and sort of like, obviously people relating. I know I can definitely relate to that over time, but why is that? Where does that come from? Like, why is that happening, you think?
All right, well, at least from what I've seen, mostly I talk from personal experience. You know, working harder, at least American culture, and maybe UK-ish, I can't speak the same way. In America, more is better. More money is better. More fame is better. More muscles are better. More businesses, more things on your resume, more. It's like it's not a country of moderation. And so more work is better. It's this whole thing. You got a problem? Work harder. Your teen's not doing well in school. They're not working hard enough. You're not healthy. Well, you're not working hard enough at X, Y. You know, that's like this crazy thing that sometimes it makes sense, but rarely is working harder the answer. And no one in here is not working hard enough. That's not a thing. So it's like, okay, were you trying to beat this problem with the wrong stick? So what I found is that working, this is my personal experience, more than like 25 hours a week, I could get more done when I did, but I lost touch with kind of breakthrough ideas. And the breakthrough ideas things aren't things that happen every day or every week or month. They're just there. And so sometimes just thinking different, which is working harder or just even 40, 50 hours a week, to me still is crazy. And what we're going to is this world with AI, where a lot of that work is often busy work. It's cover your ass work. It's busy work. You know it. You have your bosses who in boards you report to. I've been on boards. Like, oh my God, this stuff is, they have so much bullshit. But you have to go through the form. I see people laughing and smiling, right? And you ask your team for a lot of stuff just because out of habit. Prove the ROI. What's the projections? And like, you need to justify that. So there's a lot of just habitual work that we don't really need. And it's really hard to break because we're all doing it. So that's one reason. The other reason is that, okay, you get a breakthrough, right? You build this amazing AI tool. Provides like live intent data to get your customers. And then 30 other companies do the same thing. right? Because we have this tsunami of not only marketing noise that drowns everyone's messages out, but now copycatting, right? It's getting easier than ever to not only build products, but to copy features, copy products. Again, how do you stay unique? How do you stay relevant? And so I think, again, inside of, you know, Red Ocean, I didn't read the book, but the idea is, right, it's very hard to have a breakthrough in some area. We actually have a unique advantage that kind of lifts you above the crowd. So that can be, as a person, I found it's more on like the internal, I don't know, mindset or self-management, like your beliefs and your mindset and how you approach the world is one way to do that. Also, in the individual career-wise, it's like how do you create sometimes a personal brand or a product or something that's different. But right now, reputation, audience, brand, personality is something that is unique to you and can't be replicated by AI. Any product you build can pretty much be replicated more easily than ever. So that's as a human, as a business, it's hard because no matter what you do to accomplish, except things like community, creating relationships with people, being inspirational, inspire, trust, authenticity, those are the things that are much, much harder for other companies to replicate. And so again, if you're too focused on building product or features and just getting numbers, you're by definition doing things other people can just copy easily.
No, and those things never go out of style, right? Again.
No, I mean, my belief too is one of the things that will be unique and uncopyable is, again, who you are as a person and continuing to figure out what that means, beliefs, people that you have relationships with, family, friends, work, audiences, right? So, you know, it's like an influencer. You have an audience. Like, those things you can't just copy. Yeah. And messages, you know, I'm not worried. To me, AI and the whole copycat thing is right now irrelevant to me because I'm doing my own thing. It's not competitive. It could be helpful. It's just different.
Yeah.
And I think in most tech companies, it's going to be hard to stay in that space. You're going to have to continue to innovate on the product, but innovate too on culture, ideas, relationship creation, and relationship improvement with your audience. If I'm a CEO, my number one thing would be, how do I create stronger relationships with my team? Well, my family, my team, friends, my customers, my partners, because no matter what happens on the tech front, those relationships are, again, you can't copy them, you can't replicate them. And we're all craving those more than ever since COVID and all the remote stuff.
Yeah. You didn't even hear the keynote earlier today. And like, it's like we planned this.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about assets and building the intangibles and really focusing on that long game. Aaron, and as part of your success, you've kind of spoken a little bit about the blessing of ignorance in terms of getting you to where you are. What does that mean?
Having a big family, or I think back, like how hard it's been over the last 13, 14 years of starting small with two kids, and then every year we would have a baby or adopt. And we adopted a newborn baby or a four-year-old from China with arthrogryposis, or two teenagers or an eight-year-old all over. And so again, if I knew how hard it was, would I have done it? And now looking back, it's almost like I'm glad I didn't know how hard it would be through years at a time, and totally worthwhile. And I know a lot of entrepreneurs say, if I knew how hard it would be to start that company the first time, especially, it's way harder than you think and can be worth more. But you know, at Salesforce, jumping into that sales job, and I don't even know sales. What's a CRM? I didn't know. I was like, I knew I needed sales to learn how to build a professional sales organization before I started another company. And so it's like the ignorance was a blessing because I wasn't able to overthink it. It's like, oh, I'll just figure something out. I'll get in there, I'll do well, and I'll figure some way to make a mark. I don't know what that is. I'll figure it out. Sometimes knowing too much can help people or myself overthink it. It's like my kids, you know, there's times where they might jump off the first time. They're really young, we have this trampoline in the backyard, and I put this huge ladder up, and they'll go up to a high step and jump off the trampoline, or maybe off a car to grass. And the first time they're like, yoo-hoo. And after that, like, oh, wait, what did I just do? I'm not doing that again. And again, I think oftentimes the further we get on in our careers and we get kind of pigeonholed into like being a sales executive and a marketing executive, and it's like all the knowledge and the momentum / inertia is really helpful until we feel like we need to make a change. And then it hurts us because it's like, oh, wait, I have all this stuff. How would I make a change to some new career? Whether it's because you either have to or you want to, or it'd be easier in a lot of ways if you could let go of that knowledge to make a change. It can become baggage at some point.
We have to want to go back second to AI because why not? We have to, right? You're talking about like in terms of company differentiation, ideas and so forth. Think about like the impact on the individual. We talked a little bit about, you know, standing out at work and things like that. What do you think in the long run for a person's daily life, right? Outside of thinking big about companies and all, like, what do you think the ultimate impact will be on AI?
On balance, I don't think anything that great. Because again, all the technology in some sense helps us, but also hurts us. Let me start with actually a team first. So I'm thinking, you know, the fact of AI, what that is going to do, and it's a huge opportunity, but the downside is that when AI, and it's not that far away, basically can replicate people's avatars, right? Whether it's deepfakes, whether you use an avatar to repurpose yourself to be able to create content on your own or to do it when you're not around, great. But there's deepfakes as well. So the point is, like, people's trust in what's online is going to hopefully go down. More skepticism, right? There's also kind of more bullshit. There's a fact where if something works and there's a business who can make money doing something, they're going to replicate that to infinity. Yeah. And if something is kind of authentic and they're just doing it to inspire people, that's not going to be replicated to infinity. So my hypothesis is that in the sea of online stuff, there's going to be way more biased information. We already see that today, like reviews. Like, how many people trust review sites? They can be helpful, but you're like, oh, I don't know if I trust this. So way more biased information. So what it'll do, I think, if I was, you know, in business, I realize people's trust will be low. So if the more I can be kind of honest, clear, you can use the word authentic. And I think authentic means I'm just trying to help people. I'm just trying to share a message without trying to just sell you on something or get you as a follower. That will stand out as something that people will crave, right? Brands and people they can trust. It's going to be more on people. So let's say Sixth Sense, company brands will be there, but it'd be more important to, like, who are the people behind the brand? The individuals doing the podcast or the individuals doing the newsletter. That's where I would go as a way to have a long-term success and avoid a lot of the challenges AI will bring. So as an individual, AI is just going to multiply that in terms of the opportunities for people if you know how to use it. But most people won't. It's also a way to more easily numb yourself. I don't need to have a real relationship. I can have a virtual relationship. I don't need to make money or be successful because I can pretend to in some online world in the bottom of my parents' basement. Yeah. So again, the people who know how to take advantage of it, who are emotionally intelligent, they'll do, the rich will get richer that way. Maybe not in money, who knows? And everyone else is going to struggle. So more winners and more losers at the same time.
Time is flying by. Wow. I have one last question, and it's mainly because we have such a brilliant audience here of go-to-market leaders. You do a lot of work helping leaders by coaching them to build their own brand. What advice do you have for the folks in the room?
Well, yeah, specifically to help them write, design a business book right now. So again, this is an example of what I found worked for me, and now like I really enjoy helping people do. Going back to this, if you're a person, you want to clarify your message and stand out. For me, business books, I love books. And a lot of people want to write a book. Other people, they might be drawn towards videos or some other form of expression. But I'm just going to talk about books because that's what I know. Yeah, just help them. What's your idea? How would it resonate? It's the same thing as a company. Who's the ideal reader? What's their problem, their pain? How are you going to help them solve it? What's the solution? And I find a lot of times people have a great idea, but they're just hesitant. They kind of want validation. And to take that idea and say, yes, that's a great idea, because it always seems to be a great idea. It needs changing and massaging, but it's an amazing idea. You know, someone who, a friend of mine just had an idea, he wanted to write a book on how to stand out to get a job, right? Because again, people can apply to hundreds of jobs at once. AI is going to go through them all. If you don't want to be in that sea of the same, how do you stand out? I'm not really sure, but I'm like, that for sure, that book is amazing. And for him, it's like really validating. And for him, if he pursues that, it'll help him feel fulfillment when you create this thing, whether you write yourself or get help, and to find his own message and to elevate his own game in his career and to elevate his own game in himself and his confidence and his feeling like, oh, he has something worthwhile, this new area, not just being a sales director. And he can put this out and people will want to hear about it. You know, beyond his daily routine, he's got other things that are incredibly valuable and helpful to people. So I think it's no matter who you are, if you get to that point where you have something that you want to put out there, whether it's a book, a video, a message, finding some people around you who will help not only support you, to encourage you to do it, but also give you useful guidance or help to shape it and craft it. And over the usually years it takes to do this sort of thing.
Well, that was fast.
Book ideas, awesome. Anybody?
You got me thinking. So,
yeah.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you all for participating in our first live podcast, I think. So, Aaron, appreciate
pleasure,
it.
Aaron.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And also, please subscribe. Every week we drop a new episode. Definitely check it out. This is actually episode 29 or 30, so we're getting up there. So lots to check out. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. You've been listening to Revenue Makers.
Do you have a revenue project you were asked to execute that had wild success? Share your story with us at sixthsense.com/revenue. We might just ask you to come on the show. And if you don't want to miss the next episode, be sure to follow along on your favorite podcast app.